is the leisurely art form. Conversation is. Oh, say conversation. That's what everybody's engaging in. All right? Do you get the importance of that? So that's an anti-environment to the conversational abilities of the Android meme.
Ooh.
I mean, what is intelligence?
Yeah.
Look at all that it does for you. It's sort of more left hemisphere matching information. Because right. So you ask a question, and there's all kinds of answers that have been matched into the record, and that's what he provides. So education, which is based on matching, doesn't work anymore. So they should encourage the kids to be creative, and that's difficult because the Android meme is more creative, or the effects of the digital world, you can't keep up with the creativity of all that's being done in all the different worlds or media. So it's super creative on a collective level. The only thing, you can't even say this. I was going to say the only thing you can't do with this thing is fuck it. But a lot of people have sex through it. They masturbate to it. You know, it's just as good as anything else. So it's even got that part of human communication going on.
Oh, Lord.
You get more data for masturbating on through the superintelligent Android meme than any human could provide you. So everything that a human does in large range of communication is done by that. So that's pretty intelligent. So what would be an intelligence that you don't believe it's at yet, Madeline? You know, what is intelligence that you don't think it's meeting yet, that we still got the edge on?
Interesting question. You got me. Well, it's still not, like, content's not coming out of the ether yet.
You say they're humans making the content.
Yeah.
But what is the point? Okay, listen to this. So, okay, a bunch of humans are writing different columns. Well, you can use the Android meme to lay them all out for you, contrast and compare, and get on another level of pattern recognition that the individual journalist can't give you. So it provides ways to look at layouts of information that we're not even aware of.
There's an aggregate effect that's different from the
It can be a committee.
Individual.
So,
but still, without humans, what would it do? Just answer that.
What? Say it again. What would it do?
Without any input from humans, Android, like, it would have nothing to do, wouldn't it?
That would be a valid criticism 20 years ago. But the Internet is running on software that doesn't need any more human input.
Yeah, it would probably do something, but I wonder what.
Like the stock market, Bob.
Yeah, the stock market is run automatically by it.
There's some sort of perpetual motion thing going on for sure.
Yeah.
It's
reached critical mass. And this is why major people like that guy Joy, somebody Mr. Joy, occasionally one of these guys in the techno level of it, high up there, they freak. And they start yelling to the public, this is taking us over. You've seen those guys. They pop up every couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of it. Every day, and they see the more advanced functions, and they fucking get scared because they realize what it can do, and they can't control it.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, people say, oh, they ain't intelligent. Well, they're not looking at the word intelligent, and it's way beyond. And so a lot of the systems can run by themselves. I mean, it's self-emerging.
And they do run by themselves.
Yeah. Somebody could maybe stop it somehow.
Yeah, our notion of intelligence is
puny. It's puny what we're defending. We're defending nothing because nobody thought it through. because they're too harassed by the Android meme because they got no money and they got to work at their jobs and three jobs a day and all that. They haven't got time to think anything through.
Meet the deadline. Yeah, and they're beyond, it's becoming beyond human in that way. When it's out of the control, out of the hands of humans, then you,
I don't even know if that's the right way to say it. It's becoming superhuman. If humans are assholes, it's a fucking, you know, it's very totalitarian on YouTube and Facebook. They knock you off. They disembowel you for nebulous reasons. What were you saying there, Nick?
Is it running us?
Well it is running you because you're fucked if it stops. That's what everybody says.
Fucked if it stops, and also like it sent, you know, 100,000 San Franciscans into the streets today.
100,000, really?
Oh, it looks like, yeah, at least.
And they're protesting a bunch of idiots that aren't relevant to anything. This is what's so. This is where it's really anti-Trump.
Well, they're protesting the you know, that whole three people that the scene in Charlottesville, yeah.
And what they're really doing, they have to pretend there's an enemy, so they say Trump is one of those guys, and they're protesting Trump. It's just an all part of an operation to drive Trump crazy so he'll quit. That's all they're doing.
Well,
it doesn't matter who gets elected. I think
people
all on both sides, on all sides, are the ionic effects, and they're fed up with any kind of representative democracy.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter if it's Trump. It doesn't matter if it's their congressmen or senators. Those people are there to represent. Each one of those guys represents millions of people, and that doesn't fit anymore. Like, just look
at
Twitter.
Yeah,
leading up to the election, the presidential election, there were so many people that took to Twitter who got involved in politics that weren't, and they felt
didn't
like
know
Twitter,
anything.
They didn't know anything, but Twitter dumbed it down so that they could talk.
Yeah.
They think they were talking to Trump and to other Trump supporters.
Yeah, this is not
having
this
it,
is
yeah.
This is where, you know, Obama was the last president, because you can't have a president technically since 2012 or 2010, or since Ian showed up, 2009. That's about when Web 2.0 took off. There's nobody is understanding that and articulating that the verbal conceptual terms they use to describe reality ain't what's going on. And
right.
So if you're getting pissed off that all 100,000 people coming out against Trump, well, don't get bothered by that. That's not what they're doing. They're doing something else that the Internet made them do. It's a new form of social partying. So you can't have a president in the traditional way. I guess if Hillary got back in, millions of right-wingers would be out there fucking up and probably starting to blow things up.
Yeah.
So we're witnessing a mass mistaken identity going on.
So is it like the Android meme is perpetuating a hive mind mentality?
Hell
well,
yeah.
That's a given. That's been going on since radio. That's radio. This is not hive mind. This is individual hallucination and creating your own scene, creating your own world, bigger than Saturn. And there's millions of people doing that, and there are millions of people pretending they're part of something, and there's variations
it's
of
more
that.
It's more being part of something than creating your own scene, I would say.
Yeah.
It's very much
no, part of yourself.
It's hurting.
Madeline, that's the chemical body. You go back being yourself when you go home, and you start fucking complaining about the 100,000 people you're hanging out with and making up stories about it for your Facebook, your page.
But you're saying that they're – oh, okay.
You can't say anybody is doing anything for any very long time during the day. They're doing other things with their other bodies later in the day.
Yeah. I'm just looking at – yeah, I'm just going off everybody's Facebook posts. I mean, a funny one today was just now. I saw one that said it showed a bunch of pictures of the crowds, and the caption was, "This is what love looks like." And I like practically spit out my beer.
This is what love looks like?
Yeah, because, you know, supposedly the Nazi guys are all their hate, and everyone from here that went out today is they think they're about love.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, good point.
I'm
well,
like,
that's,
that's,
I mean,
not what love looks like. That's what sheep looks like.
Right. You know, man, you've got a million people observing and commenting on it today. So you can have three people causing an international, global, billions of people talking, or you can have 200,000 people. Doesn't matter what the size is; it's what they're all talking about.
Yeah. Well, from the photos, there's a hell of a lot of them there.
Well, it's crazy, and those people would agree with me. And they said, I'm just out there to have fun. I'm just putting on the whole world, or all five bodies.
Yeah, they're out
there
in their tutus and their rainbows and shit. They're having a blast.
Yeah, it's an excuse to get together.
It is, yeah.
And so Trump is totally justified in ignoring every bit of it. It has nothing to do with what his job is. The only thing he pays attention to is me and Dr. Dean. So does the Queen. The Queen does
too.
Well,
if he pays attention to you, why can't he speak?
Oh, he knows.
Well,
he's not concerned about it. He's only concerned about his tweets, which are superficially ridiculous. He just says everybody's great. There's no information going on. He's not informing us of anything.
Right. And he knows all that.
You're on your own, everybody. No, you're not. You're not even on your own. You're forced to be involved with everybody. Look at Chad's over there with the International Digital Transient Hive.
Yeah. Stateless.
Let's hear a
digital
bit about
nomadism.
It,
Chad. Yeah.
Let's hear about your experiences. What was it like with Bert?
Oh, it was awesome. We loved hanging out with Bert. He's a great guy. He's he's an awesome tour guide. It's different talking to Bert in person than it is on the phone. You get to see, 360 degrees of him communicating. We had so many different conversations on topics we resonated with, everything from Bob to Ion to
chocolate.
And yeah.
What did you think? You're shocked that there's no obesity there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
It's pretty amazing. Most of the people here are pretty thin. They're not emaciated or anything, but gigantic people. Like, Bob, you know the Hawaiians? You know how fat they are?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see that here ever. Like, I just haven't seen anybody like that.
No, I grew up in Europe, and that's very true. Or at least it was when I was there. I'm not surprised that it's still true. They don't do the TV and sodas and stuff. But when you said that thing about Americans needing to be more grounded, that just created an image for me of how, like, America's where it's all going down, and I just feel like, okay, we're all holding it down here, like, somehow. Like.
Well, it's also gotten me out of the American-centric view. So,
I got to stop. Who's got the machine on? I'm going to mute that person.
I think
it's
Chad.
In the car, Bob. No, someone in the car.
Ooh,
okay.
Wait. It's fixed. Stop fucking around,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, maybe
fixed.
They muted themselves.
Yeah.
No. I keep
it's Brian.
Screwing up. No. I keep trying to mute this guy, this new name, and I keep hitting host. So back. Okay, it's not happening now. It might have been this new person. I don't know what they were doing. Okay, what was your last words, Chad?
Well, I could keep talking about how there's no fat people here, but I was going to go back to the whole thing about stateless.
Yes.
So after everybody knows my frustrations with Canada, Bob knows he visited Canada this summer, and he just saw that people are very fat and retarded.
Yeah.
So there's a level of degeneracy happening in Canada that I think is even worse than America. So I've just been jumping from one hot potato to another, right? Because I'm like, fuck Canada. This is too much. Like, the standard in Canada is mental retardation. The long, like they just they're having such a they're having a really hard time adapting to the new environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we could go into why that is, and but I think Bob's covered that inside and out about Canada's unique media ecological position. And also Ion's utter disgust with Canada must have done something. Something deficient, and they're obviously very remag deficient. So move to the States.
Well said. Well, yes, you say remag deficient, not magnesium deficient.
I got that from Bert. We were standing there talking to you on Skype in Zurich, and the ambulance went by, and Bob goes, oh, there's a remag deficiency.
Gee.
Yeah.
So anyway, So decided to move to the States, worked on getting a visa to get over there. And I mean, if you want to legally migrate to the U.S., it's almost impossible. It's fucking ridiculous. No wonder you guys have so many illegal aliens. I'm not going to bring trouble to that country. And it's the second time now I've tried to get into the States. The first time I wanted to get in to be in the armed forces when I was 18. And now this, and a random lottery part of the process. Because you have to weed out all the applications. So Well, maybe I can just leave and come back in on a raft. But then they'll just push you up to Canada. Canada's taking all the asylum seekers from the U.S. now.
Oh, God. Hey, Chad, did you say that you could enter illegally easily?
Yeah, maybe if I left and came back on a raft with no identification, I could say, I'm a refugee from Syria. But if you try to do it legally, forget about it. And then it got me thinking, maybe I'm not that interested anyway. Is that really the place I want to live? Do I want to tie myself down there? So we decided to come over to Europe. And we're just kind of bouncing in and out of the Schengen zone. That's where you get to spend a total of 3 months out of every 6 months in the main European countries. And then out to the Balkans and the Ukraine and the UK, the countries that aren't part of the Schengen zone. So it's kind of like live a few months in Europe and then bounce to the outskirts for a few months and then come back in. You can do that forever, that bouncing back and forth.
Mm.
But so far, it's definitely a higher standard of living than I've experienced in North America.
Now, why is that?
When we got to Zurich, Bert said, welcome to isolated utopia. And
well, what'd you say? Wait. You said welcome
isolated
to
utopia.
Who said that?
Not true.
Bert said that.
Oh, isolated utopia. Okay.
Yeah.
So Zurich runs like a very well-oiled machine. And again, the people are all, there's no fatsos. They're all eating bread. They're all eating very well, eating big schnitzels and things like that, but they're not getting fat. And people look relaxed. I mean, they're even smoking and drinking, and they look healthy. And when I get on the bus in Canada, disgusting. It's just full of people that should have been put in insane asylums, or they should just be rotting away in a hospital basement somewhere. Like, it's disgusting.
Somebody got to shoot them.
Yeah, exactly. Put them out of their misery with an elephant gun or something. So
immediately.
In Zurich and Vienna and even here, the people on the transit are just chilled out and good looking, and they're not disgusting. So it's not a bad option to ride the transit. It actually is very efficient. We can zip all the way across town pretty quickly. So you don't need to own a car here, which is nice because I had to rent a car. And I got in two accidents while I was there. It's funny. You look at the photo albums in the photo app, and these photo albums based on where we visited, everywhere we've gone. So there's like Maui, and there's Phoenix, and then there's Calgary. And Zurich and onward, right? It's a cover image. So it takes one of the photos to show, like, okay, this is like a cover image for your photo album for Zurich, and this is one from Vienna. But the one from Calgary is just a picture I had to take for the insurance of the side of the car completely smashed in because a fucking deer ran out on the highway in front of me.
Oh.
Perfect example. Like, yeah, that's pretty much, that thumbs up Calgary right there. That's what that experience was like.
Okay, so what about the digital community of kids traveling about?
Have you I'm not the only one doing it that I've known for like 20 years now. I met him in Vancouver when I first arrived in Vancouver, and he has been doing it since then, but for different reasons. He's Chinese. His parents left him a bunch of money, and he just has been living off the royalties from that. So he travels, but he travels very, very frugally, staying in hostels and buying groceries instead of going out to five-star restaurants. So he's the first one that introduced me to this. He showed me how to rack up, like, air miles and get free room nights and free flights and things like that. So I've known about this for a long time, but I never had a word to describe what he was. Like, I explained him to people, and they'd be like, he just travels all the time. Moving. Where does he live? Nowhere. Huh? Like, they just don't get it. Like, how can someone do that? And now, I'd say probably like 5 years ago, I started to notice this term online called digital nomadism. And it was kind of the inciting book for this was 4-hour work week, which because Tim Ferriss was working for an investment bank or something, and he got tired of the rat race and decided he was going to figure out a way to make money online so that he could design a good lifestyle for himself and get out of the office. Sort of a cookbook on how to set up an online business, and then you can just travel the world while you're working. So this became a Bible for a whole generation of people who are like, hell no, I'm not working in a fucking office. I want to work on the beach in the Philippines or Maui or in a cafe in Vienna. Big thing now, and there's a website called nomadlist.com, and it ranks the cities of the world in terms of how nomad-friendly they are. One of the most nomad-friendly places in – the number one in Europe is usually either Berlin or Budapest. Vienna's pretty high up there. Zurich wouldn't be high up because the cost of living is so high.
Yeah.
Budapest has really good cost of living. Yeah. So I'd say it's costing us like probably two-thirds of what it costs to live in North America. Food is off the charts. It's just – they don't fuck around with food here in Europe. Your food is sacred. It's not. They don't treat it like genetically engineered garbage like we do in North America. See, you don't have to go hunting through the grocery store. You know, people are freaks. Find the organic section, all that kind of stuff. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah,
here, like,
I miss that.
They have a GMO ban, and they just have standards. I mean, the French Revolution was started because of bad bread in Europe.
Yep.
So a lot of digital nomads are in this city. On the list, I can see there's about, I don't know, there's a few dozen of them right now that are on the nomad forum that are in Budapest. I haven't met up with any of them yet, but I'll probably meet some on Thursday. Entrepreneur meetup.
Neat.
But they're everywhere. They're kind of stateless, and they figured it out. They're like, okay, this is how you deal with healthcare, and this is how you deal with banking, and this idea with tax and all that kind of stuff. So it's becoming a new class of people who are just perpetual travelers.
It reminds me
of... How long have you been in Budapest, Chad?
Just till the 22nd of September. So we're staying a month in Budapest, and then we're going to the Ukraine. So... there's a city in the Ukraine that's on the far western border. It's on the border with Poland. It's a very European kind of city. It's called Lviv. And it'll be good, too, because the cost of living there is even lower than here, like 40% lower than Budapest, because the Ukrainian money is pretty low value. And then after that, we're probably going to go spend a month or two in Belgrade, in Serbia. I've heard good things about the culture there.
And are you using your dollars to get around?
No way. You can't use dollars here. So as soon as we get to a new country, we just go to the ATM and pull out the local currency.
Are you going to go to Croatia?
But you're not...
Maybe. I don't know. I don't hear too many people jumping up and down about it. Like that it's.
I do.
Yeah?
Well,
you must try and get a
in the summer. For vacationing, although maybe not for work. It's supposed to be absolutely beautiful. And cheap. So.
Yeah.
Try
we're also looking
Prague.
At Montenegro. Prague?
Oh, yeah.
We have to watch out. I'm trying to stay out of the Schengen zone as much as possible. Because we only get 3 months every 6 months in the Schengen zone. Which I personally think thing's fucking retarded. You get 3 months in all the European countries. Whereas I can spend 3 months in the Ukraine or 3 months in Serbia. You know? The Schengen zone keeps getting bigger, but the 3 months doesn't get bigger.
What is that, Chad?
What is the Schengen zone?
It's a common border area. I've agreed to. I think there's 26 countries. So like Italy, Switzerland,
for visa
France,
purposes.
Spain. For what purposes?
For visa purposes.
Right.
Yeah. It's a little control mechanism.
So what are you like Airbnb-ing, Chad?
Yeah, so usually when we get to a city, the first night in the city, I'll rent a hotel so that we have a guaranteed settle in, and then the next day we go off to Airbnb for a month. But it's just cool how they really have designed their lifestyles in these cities. I mean, Zurich is so well designed. It's incredible. It's so efficient to get around in. Every little neighborhood has everything you need, from grocery stores to getting your hair cut. Like, everything is so compact. And then they've got this beautiful lake. And everybody's hanging out around the lake and making good use of their space. Whereas in North America, they tend to just leave these giant plots of land unused and undeveloped. And it creates
it's the car culture.
Vacuous feeling.
Yeah,
what's that?
Car culture. Good word.
Yeah,
car culture.
That's exactly what caused that, yep.
And the other thing, too, is the first thing I noticed, because Zurich was the first European country that we landed in. We were in the UK for whatever. And then we came to Zurich, and that was our first time actually walking down a busy street. And I mean, the street in Vancouver is so frustrating. You got people who are just assholes barreling through you, especially like the Chinese people. They don't want to get out of the way there. And you just got downright cruel, mean, angry people. But I didn't see that. Like, everybody gets out of the way for each other. Society's more developed here. People have a bit of culture. It's like Alan Cabal says in his essays, culture is hygiene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you develop culture to this degree, you know, Europe's been around a lot longer than North America. You work out these little details. A big deal.
Well, they don't have the individualism thing that Americans have. And the car thing is an extension of the individualist thing. It's like every man for yourself. You sort of don't have to get along like you do in Europe. But it definitely makes it way more pleasant.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go to somewhere like Hong Kong, it's the culture there, the Asian culture, I think, because maybe there's more people squeezed into small areas. The bigger personal space is non-existent. So you do have that where you're going up and down the street and they're just in your space. I mean, it's weird, but that's their culture. They don't know about personal space. So,
yeah, it's not a thing. Well, that's exactly kind of what I was saying though. Like we have personal space. It's the individualist thing that other societies don't have. We're like,
right, but the thing
is
mine, okay, when I was living in Arizona, they've got Arizona, even though it's one of the newer states, since it's in the US, it's further down the road than Canada is in terms of social evolution. And there's an understanding down in Arizona. Like people keep their distance from each other, it's respect. You know, almost everyone's carrying, right? But in Canada, it's so new. And they're trying to throw all the different cultures together that they haven't worked out the details yet. And it's just, it's an utter disaster. What Trudeau has going on in that country is a fucking joke. It's such a disaster. And showing off.
Well, San Francisco is like that too, though.
Hold on a second. he's using his socks to virtue signal to say, you know, look, I represent Muslims and I represent these people and stuff like that. He's trying to do what they do in Europe, but he's doing it wrong. He's doing it like a little baby trying to imitate a grown-up. Culturalism here, and I think it works pretty good in Zurich, right, Bert?
Yes.
It's not like France. It's very multicultural, but it's working like a well-oiled machine. I don't know what they do there, but it's working. Hungary is not as multicultural, so I won't use that as an example. In France, it's not really working there right now. So Zurich's a good example of, like, Trudeau would try and copy that and say, I want to be like the way it is in Zurich. I want Canada to be multicultural. It's like, well, you're not there yet. Wars. You know, there has to be a lot more bloodshed before you get to that point. Like, they've worked it out here.
Oh, that's what
but
it is.
But they
makes?
Have a different, totally different media ecological position. Mm-hmm. Well, every time there's a new environment comes in, there's usually a war, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So Canada is fucked. It's totally fucked. And I even see why I see it more now. It's so fucked because it has to go through all these stages of evolution. It doesn't realize it. And the people are already having a hard time dealing with the new environment. So they're just like, oh, yeah, we're going to be like a European country because we don't want to be like America. Like, you know what Europe had to go through to get to this point? The ecological evolution. And plus they're more compact and it's totally different, but go ahead.
Boy.
So that's all. My only link to Canada now is my passport, really, in a bank account.
Do you have ancestors in Europe? You do, in France. You wouldn't want a French passport,
France.
Would you?
You don't want that. I couldn't possibly get French citizenship.
Oh,
far,
no?
Far removed, like, in the 1500s or something.
Okay.
So, maybe on my mother's side.
Yeah, I don't know if it's still the case, but a few years ago I could have gotten an Irish passport and an Australian one, but I think that may not be true anymore. Things have changed.
Yeah. Oh, we have a great place here in Hungary. I'm looking out the window. We're on the fifth or sixth floor, and I'm directly looking at the top of the Parliament buildings. Like, we're like three blocks from the Parliament buildings, the ones in Budapest are. It's got to be one of the biggest buildings in the world. Because it's fucking huge.
Wow.
So impressive. That's one of the things I love about Europe is you see these everywhere on the buildings, just monuments to greatness, to largeness, to thinking like a god and out there in the world. The apartment building I lived in Vancouver, it was practically made of cardboard. Like, if you leaned up against the wall, your elbow would probably go through it. Something I'm in here is a fortress. But in terms of architecture, I was very impressed with Vienna. It's like a combination of, like just bigness, power, but also elegance.
Yeah, a lot of fine details.
And solidity.
In the buildings.
Yeah. What's that?
Details, but also this... I mean, because it's solid. Like, I mean, the ship's literally built out of rock. And has been there for eons. Yeah, it's a neat vibe.
And we have some interesting
versus these track
sort of
houses
anomalies
that we have.
Happen there. So the hotel we were staying at was just in a perfect location. It seemed like we were central to everything, but we weren't down in the thick. So every time we went to leave our hotel, we had to walk through this park. And the park had, like, it was a green area and it had these two, like, circular paths, like, one on each side. And we had to walk up through the middle of these circular paths. It was like we were walking through the middle of a figure eight. And then we'd go out into the town. But I swear to God, one day we left and we turned right, and then we ended up at the restaurant we were looking for. And then the next day, we walked straight through the park, and we hit the restaurant in, like, one block. And I'm like, excuse me, what the fuck is going on here?
It moved.
8 blocks to the right and like in this big round kind of path to get to our restaurant. And today it's just right there, just around the corner.
Mm.
So there's some woo-woo going on. And then another time I was sitting, okay, this is cool. I was going to this cafe that used to be one of Hitler's favorite cafes, Cafe Spurl. And not just Hitler, but like some of the other famous people that occupied Vienna in the like 1913 time, like Trotsky and Stalin. I think Stalin was there at the same time.
Yes.
So this cafe that's just haunted with the ghosts of these early 20th century intellectuals and revolutionaries. And I'm just staring out the window one day, and all of a sudden, so I see this guy drive by in a car. He's got like white hair, one of those little gray Citroens or whatever. And then like within 1 second, I see him drive by again. Like I literally saw a glitch in the Matrix.
Wow. I was going to say, did you pick up some residue or you picked up something? Oh, trippy.
Residue? Yeah, probably. Yeah, it was pretty trippy. I told Kate, I'm like, I just saw the same guy drive by twice. She's like, oh, maybe he's lost. I'm like, no, maybe.
It's like the cat in the Matrix. Yeah.
Yeah. If his car was like.
He was going the same direction both times.
Same direction both times. Within 1 second, it was like, he went by, boom, and it was like.
And then he was like, boom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Meow.
But I mean, last time I was in Europe, there was in 2009 and 2010, when I ended up at the castle, there was a lot of things that happened then that were pretty crazy. I found a lot of symbols and stuff, and then that's when the gates were opened and all that. So there's something cool here in Europe. I think it's all the, like with Bob and Carolyn and Roxy when they were in France, it's just a lot of holes in the Swiss cheese.
Well, did they plug this? Did they plug the holes or open them?
Well, I don't know. There's still some holes.
Because I felt like they were completing stuff.
I'm sure it doesn't happen instantly. Like, there's probably like leftovers that I'm still traveling through. But it's not as crazy as it was when I was back here in 2009. It's not like a daily occurrence. I just see less and less anomalies all the time, but. Still the occasional thing that catches my eye, just like a wink from Ion.
Yeah.
So what else? What else did we talk about in Zurich? We talked about Ion, martial arts. I guess you just, your story of coming from the States.
Yes. Talked about that. That's we talked about
Bert
the family.
Hold on a second. Bert and I have the same kind of stomach. We have like the same kind of like stomach definition. We have this kind of like the top of our stomach is like kind of jutted out a bit, and then it goes in tight, but it's like super thick. It's like a super thick wall.
Yes.
A little bit barrel chested, sort of. Is that what you're describing?
Barrel torso.
I guess that's
barrel
Barrel torso. Waist is small, but from the waist up, it just is like
dense.
Like a protective vest. Protective vest.
That's exactly what I'm picturing. That's a good
way. We were walking through Vienna, and on one of the buildings, they have all these things. Like, they have like Neptune and all these big gods on the side of the building, and the way their bodies are defined. And Kate goes, "Look, it's like you and Bert have those kinds of bodies."
Oh, what a trip. What a that. Did you take pictures of that?
I've got some pictures, yeah.
That's interesting.
No, Meeting Chad helped me because I'm like, this is weird. Just the whole way the arms and chest and stomach, you know. It's like a 12-pack instead of a 6-pack, but it's really strong. Gives you a really strong torso feeling.
And then you see Chad, and he looks the same, and you're like, oh, wow.
Right. We hugged each other, and I'm like, damn, I know what that feels like. It's like solid like a rock. You know, it's like, damn. I know what that feels like.
Well, you guys are, like, doing the same workouts, but it's more than that, huh? It's not.
Newsflash. All I'm doing is taking the products. I work out, baby.
You're not doing a thing.
Hey, Chad, just to give you all an update, just to give you a little RNA, I call it super RNA reset. Monday, we did a 10-hour alpine hike. 17 kilometers, okay? 1,300-meter ascent and a 1,500-meter descent. 10 hours, and all I had was the completement products and a shot of the restructure. And I wasn't hungry when I finished.
Oh, shit.
And I haven't hiked
like an hour after them.
I haven't hiked like that in a year. My partner was surprised that I made it because she walks every Sunday. Like right now, she's walking like she walks every Sunday. I haven't done shit like this in a year. And I did, and it was 10 hours during the eclipse. During the eclipse.
That's crazy, Bert.
I mean, when I think back, I'm like,
10 hours.
It's fucking crazy. 10 hours.
I did a five or six hour hike one time in the mountains years ago, and I mean, it killed me. That was before the products and everything.
Yeah, I was going to say.
There you go, the thinner the air gets.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I mean, it was a challenge because, you know, the main thing is the mind fuck. You know, you're just climbing and climbing. I mean, it took us 6 hours to go up, okay? It wasn't fucking easy. I mean, it was really, you know, straight up. And we got up and we walked across an Alp and then walked down it, you know? And that was tougher actually than going up. But, 10 hours. And just restructure and completement formulas in the water with no hunger.
Bert, do you have spikes on your shoes? Is it that kind of climbing where you have?
No, you need really thick. I mean, it was like a glacier. It was an old glacier, actually.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
There was it's like a whole series of glaciers, but this complex was an old glacier. When we got at the top, we were at the glacier and we walked down the side of it. It's just rocks. So you need like really heavy soled shoes to be able, but no spikes. No, that goes to the really the, this was what they had different level trails. There's like a yellow trail, which is basic, but then like the red and white is a level over. And then like the blue and white is where you take your life in your own hands. So that's what happened to these. If you probably heard the news, like 8 people got swept away in a landslide here earlier this week.
Yeah,
and they were in like the blue and white trails, and that's just fucking insane. I did one blue and white trail last summer, and I said I'm not fucking doing that again. Fuck that. I couldn't sleep because I couldn't sleep because every time I closed my eyes, I saw myself falling off the cliff.
Oh shit.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I don't. That's not even fun. That's not even close to being fun. But some people really ain't get into that. But that shit is not fun. But the RNA reset products, I call them the super RNA reset because I freaked out because I'm like, I'm not hungry. I have energy. And I've been walking for 10 hours. That's insane.
I hear you on the not getting hungry part. I mean, I fast till at least noon now every day.
Yeah.
No hunger.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do get hungry, but you just made me realize that I think maybe I accomplished something when I was in Idaho because we hiked up a mountain to watch the eclipse. Actually, we did it 2 days in a row. I'm a heavy smoker, and we've been drinking a bunch and not sleeping much. And I was ahead of most of our crew. And I mean, I was breathing a bit, but it was not a big deal.
When you get in like that,
give
you a secret. When you get in a habit of like that, when you're like walking up a thing, it's gas yourself. But if you really focus on your exhale, you don't get tired.
Oh, yeah. No, I already know that. Well, see, I was fine, actually.
Yeah. If you switch to your mind, exhaling.
I'm focusing on the exhale. No, I know you're right about that. I remember like a year ago we were talking about that, and I really noticed it at work. I was, because I was blowing past all these young guys at work. And it's because I was focusing on the exhale.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, now that I think about it, I should have been like lagging behind and crying the whole time. But I was ahead of all the non-smokers without trying. I was stopping to take pictures and shit, you know.
And waiting get this, for them I didn't to lose any weight.
To you.
I didn't lose any weight either.
God, I would like to lose some weight, but I'm not.
That's so freaky.
So Bert, I don't talk about the family thing.
Yeah, no, it's that the here in Switzerland they use the family archetype. I call it now actually in dealing here the family archetype, but it's really like the it's the new insane asylum because you have to deal with family, you know. But luckily, family here is not that big. But I see it in the neighbors and everything. It's like the new insane asylum.
Yeah.
Instead of going to the clinic, you have to deal with the family.
Yeah.
But they deal with heavily the family archetype. What's that?
I think my family fell apart.
They just fell apart? Yeah. You don't know?
Kind of seems. It seems like it right now. I'm not sure if that's my perception or if that's really, or if it's a phase or if it's really happened. Both my parents died in the last couple of years, and then we sold the house, and now, like, my sister's not going to my other sister's wedding, and nobody's really talking. It's weird.
Yeah, it's a tough institution to keep the illusion going in this day and age.
Yes, it is. That it is.
Oh, that's what I see. I mean, yeah, I talk to the two siblings that I really resonate with, and it's interesting because I'm like, you know, why do I care about the rest? And it's just this sense of duty that's instilled in me, really.
Hmm. Oh, the family became popular when it was the day of, you know, pitchforking hay and milking cows and that kind of thing.
Yes.
You needed the
parents
team.
Needed to have kids that take care of, you need to build a team, and they needed someone that was going to take care of them when they get old.
It was a work.
But now there's a state. Yeah, but now the state takes care of everybody, so everybody who can't take care of themselves, they do a shitty job of it, but I think they do a better job of that here, because when I lived in Holland, I know that lived with, even though he was old, he was like 80 something, and he was able to live with dignity in his own house, and you know, he was a healthy man and he was well provided for. Whereas, at least in Canada, like people when they're getting to that age, they just fucking lose their minds. People in their 70s and get dementia. Dementia is like epidemic there.
Yeah, I mean that's. Don't you think that's all the drugs and the weird fucking Twinkies and shit, like strange food that's not food?
It's that. It's also the mindset, but it's also just knowing that the older they get, like that what they're going to get from their pension, from the government taking care of them, is going to really knock them down a few pegs in their quality of life. Like, it's really shitty. Like, they can't really provide very well. So, like, if you were, you know, 75 and you're like, fuck, man, I'm going to be 80 in, like, 5 years and get barely enough.
I don't
want to
live like this.
Yeah, I don't want to live like this. I think I'm just going to mentally log off.
Yep.
Jesus.
Especially before we left for Europe, we were in my hometown. Now, Calgary, like, the West is pretty bad, but my hometown area, like, around Windsor, like, the part that's actually, like, over Ohio, it's, like, a forgotten part of Canada, and it's, like, every 50% of people there have cancer or something. It's crazy.
Oh, God.
So unhealthy. I mean, everybody at any age you talk to has some kind of disease, even if they're, like, 20 years old.
Really?
So, it's terrible.
Oh,
and the old people... I'm like, Kate, we're walking down the street here in my hometown. Look around and just take a mental picture of what you see right now. And then when we get to Europe, I want you to pull that picture back up in your mind and compare. And fucking Gomers that were walking the streets. Like, they don't even look human. I think Bob said that when he was in Ottawa, a lot of the people reminded him of the Simpsons cartoon. Have you ever heard of a cartoon called Herman? It was in the newspaper back when I was a kid. I don't know who the author of it is, but, like, all the people in it are just so fat. Like, they're just rolls. Like, they're the kind of people that, like, the fat just drapes over their waist kind of thing. And that's what you saw in my hometown. Like, they're not human anymore. Like, they're a different species.
Yeah.
They've become something entirely different. Mm-hmm. They live off of maybe just there's so much surface area on them that they're just absorbing some kind of nutrients out of the air. I can't imagine that their insides I can't imagine that their insides are working on, you know, pulling nutrients very well, and their intestines are probably like miles long that, you know, but nothing can travel the length of them. Like, they're so and their face is deformed. Like, they don't look human, and their face doesn't look human. They have to carry their fat when they walk. But it's allowed.
Don't
you can't say anything about it. You're not allowed to fat shame people. This is normal. Everybody is who they are, right? And it's not a bad thing. It's normal. And now there's women who are going on Instagram taking selfies, and they look like that, and they go, you know, God damn it, I'm beautiful. I'll put, you know, Kylie Jenner to shame. Fuck, take that, girl. And they're like 450 pounds. It's like, well, healthy. Like, sorry, you're fucking sick. And I know I am, because people are putting on weight to ground themselves. But I don't. Yeah. I think they mean like more Bessel Goodman size, and not like I need to buy three seats football game size.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's people that really are looking to get grounded. You're that, or they're just looking to get bigger so that they can absorb more things out of the atmosphere. And funny story, there's a doctor that I know there. He was a friend of mine. Like, I met his wife, and she was a psychiatrist from New York who moved to my hometown. So we had a lot to talk about, because she's like, wow, this place is really bizarre, and I don't know if yet. But she introduced me to her husband, who's a medical doctor and a naturopath like Carolyn. And he had a practice there, and he had like 15,000 patients, because he's the only one that would actually do tests on people, like thoroughly test people to see what was going on in their bodies. And then he had a constant war from the same group that the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons, or whatever they're called. The College of Ontario Physicians and Surgeons, the COPS, they started going after this guy, Dr. Tom, and it used to be like every 5 years they'd come after him for something, like the way he was doing his billing or he was doing too many tests. Then they got to the point where every year they were coming after him. They were like ripping his office apart, and then he said, you know what, fuck this, I'm out, I'm done. And he just retired last year. So, like, there's 15,000 people there that don't have a decent doctor anymore.
Oh.
But that's how it works there. Ontario, I don't know what it is about that place, but holy shit, it is a medical laboratory. They just don't want anybody trying to take their lunch money from their doctors and their pharmaceutical companies.
I know what else we talked about, Ted. I talked about there's a pharmacy mindset here in Switzerland. I mean, it's like a
right.
pharmacy on every corner. Just like it said in America, like a liquor store in every corner of the city. There's like a pharmacy on every corner in Zurich.
Yeah, the green crosses. See those everywhere. Yes. Yeah, every corner.
Yes. And they have the big three pharma, Novartis, Bayer, and La Roche have their headquarters here. So there is really a hard medical pill-pushing aspect here. But they also do have people who have, they call them heal practice, which is healing practices. So there are some people that do naturopathic medicine here as well, but they have a lot of licensing things they have to, hoops they have to jump through in order to do it, but they have it.
But at least they can, naturopaths can actually practice medicine. Like they can practice there. There's some states in the U.S. where that's not even allowed. I think most states it's not allowed for a naturopathic doctor to act as a doctor. So somebody was saying, who was this? Somebody in this, in Iondom told me that.
Mm-hmm. It's allowed here, but the insurance doesn't cover it. So any, if I need a doctor, I have to pay for it out of my pocket.
Because
I won't go. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yep.
That's wild. I remember in the late 80s.
That's who it was.
I remember in the late 80s chiropractic, because I used to work in insurance, and the chiropractor was not covered. It was considered like a, I forgot the technical word name for it, but chiropractic wasn't considered covered in insurance, and now they're covered. But now it's interesting to hear that naturopaths are doing the same thing or going through the same hoops that chiropractors did like 20 years ago.
Chiropractors are covered, but they often have to be within the network of whatever insurance you've got.
Well, that's the normal HMO game. That's the HMO game.
Yeah, but then they, so now the medical clinics have their own chiropractic service, and those are the ones you have to go to. And they're usually, you know, either if they stay for any length of time, they're just really bad, or otherwise they're the brand new ones that get their 6 months or year in and then go out and do chiropractic somewhere else. So the quality is so bad for the ones that can be covered, it seems like.
Yep, that's exactly. So, and I actually discovered that I see an osteopath instead of a chiropractor now, and that is not covered at all.
No, really?
I found that it's far more effective and it's twice as expensive, and I have to pay for it all myself. And same with naturopathic physicians. I have to pay for that all myself. So, you know, I mean, luckily, I don't have to go very much. But when I do, it's me that pays for it. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, the shit that actually works, I have to pay for. Nothing I would choose to do is covered by my insurance.
Right. And the same with dental. Dental isn't covered.
Except
by
for, I think I'm going to have to get glasses soon, so that'll be partly covered.
Well, that's another difference between Europeans and Americans. In Europe, they get like, what, 30 paid vacation days a year off? And in the States, you get zero paid vacation days off work.
Yeah.
Depends on the job. Like, yeah. It depends
if you're lucky,
on your
you get 10. If you're lucky, you get 10 paid days of vacation. Yeah.
Yeah. Maximum 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in Europe, like the whole country takes a vacation at the same time.
They shut down in June, July.
Italy.
Yeah.
Germany, yeah. Certain parts. They don't do that here in Switzerland, by the way.
They have like a vacation time that everyone takes?
Yes.
Yes, they do. Absolutely.
Well, you know, Italy and Spain, they shut down, I think it's from 11 to like 2. Everything shuts down.
Yes.
From 11 to 2.
Siestas.
Siesta.
Yeah.
But so then they stay up really late.
What about, do people travel a lot then? I mean, I think of the service industry. If, you know, there's got to be restaurants
yes, they do.
And hotels and all that have to keep
well,
working.
Well, in Switzerland, the infrastructure as far as travel, it's probably one of the best in the world. Cause like I live in the, like I told Chad and Kate, I live in the country. I mean, you know, a village that maybe have maybe 300 to 500 people. And there's a bus coming by. Like I haven't driven a car to work in 13 years. I just take the transportation and there's a bus stop. Maybe 150 meters from where I live, the house. And I take a bus, and then the bus takes me into the beginning of Zurich, and then I take a tram or a trolley to where I work every morning. So I get a lot of time to read and since Ion, I get a lot of time to listen to Ion clips going to and from, and actually during work, so I'm like plugged in all the time. But it's, yeah, the transportation, but then you also here in Switzerland, you have the train. There's a, like every little village has either a bus or a bus and a train. And then there's some villages that actually have bus, train, and ship, because some people live on certain parts of the lake where they